talking about this. They all know that these questions should be asked and answered, but they're still suffering from the effects of 60-year truth embargo. Things are different now. This is not 1967. This isn't 77. And this isn't 97. This is 2008. And this issue is about to pop. My advice is stay healthy. Give up smoking. Drink less. Eat better food. Take your vitamins. And hang in there so that you're going to be here when disclosure takes place. The baby boomer generation, we will end the truth embargo, and once that announcement is made, the young people will be on board real fast.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
Hello there, my friends. This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 3. It is March 2nd, 2008. This is an ultra-fresh episode of BOA Audio. We taped it this past Wednesday evening. Our guest is founder of the Paradigm Research Group, creator of the X Conference, and a major player in the world of exopolitics. Making his BOA Audio return, he is Stephen Bassett. Stephen and I will be discussing the changes in public perception for the UFO phenomenon in the last 2 years since his last appearance, the distinction between ufology and exopolitics, the UFO connections for each of the remaining three candidates for U.S. President, McCain, Obama, and Clinton, why Steve thinks disclosure is possible for spring of 2009, his take on the Kucinich firestorm from last November, the changing stance of the media with regards to UFOs, Steve's response to the haters who are anti-exopolitics, and of course tons and tons more. It's jam-packed with information, and it's timely information when one considers where we're at here in the 2008 political cycle. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Steve Bassett, let me give you a little bit of background on him. Steve Bassett is a political activist, founder of the Paradigm Research Group, executive director of the Extraterrestrial Phenomena Political Action Committee, XPPAC, author of the Paradigm Clock website, and a political columnist, commentator, and former independent candidate for Congress. He is the executive producer of the X Conference. Presently, he is the only registered lobbyist in the United States representing ET-related phenomenon research activist organizations, and XPAC is the first political action committee to target the political implications of ET-related phenomena. Between April 19th and November 5th of 2002, he conducted an independent candidacy in the 2002 congressional campaign in the 8th District of Maryland. It was the first instance in which a candidate on the November ballot in a federal election openly addressed the matter of an ET presence and the government-imposed truth embargo. Since 1996, he has assisted a number of organizations and initiatives which have been making the case for 1. An end to the government embargo on the truth surrounding an ET presence, and 2. Open congressional hearings to take the testimony of former military and agency employee witnesses to ET-related events and evidence. He has spoken to millions of Americans about the likelihood and implications of a formal disclosure event. His website is www.paradigmresearchgroup.org, P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, researchgroup.org. And the website for the X Conference is www.x-conference.com. Check out both those sites. They are fantastic. And now, without any further ado, let's rock and roll. This interview was recorded on February 27, 2008. Steve Bassett talking about exopolitics on BOA Audio. Season 3.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special edition of BOA Audio Season 3. We're bringing back one of our guests here from Season 1, someone who was instrumental in my entry into the field of ufology and the esoteric via his outstanding conference, the X Conference in Washington, D.C. I'm stunned to think that it's been 4 years since the first X Conference, which I attended and sort of got the ball rolling on what I've been doing now. I'm kind of scared that it's been 4 years already. In a world that is esoterica, that is full of talkers, Steve Bassett our guest here is a doer, and I think that's the best compliment I can say about him. There's a lot of talkers in the world of ufology and the esoteric, but Steve Bassett's a doer. He actually produces things, so I have great respect for him for that. Welcome back to the show, Steve Bassett. He's calling from Laughlin, Nevada at the International UFO Congress, so I'm really excited to get him here on the show, and thanks for taking some time during the festivities to talk to us and come back to the show.
Well, it's always great to be with you, Tim. I'm honored that you are one of the ex-conference alumni. There are a growing number of these, and it's always gratifying to think that the event was instrumental in bringing you into the field. There are a number of other people that have told me the same thing, but other conferences have been playing that role for the last 60 years. That's what is a citizen science movement underway.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we last talked to you a couple years ago, and I guess just to sort of dive in and start things out, since your last visit, which was like January of 06, ufology's kind of made a comeback here. It's broken back into the mainstream, sort of reestablished itself. I guess just talk about that, the resurgence of ufology in the last couple of years, and of course how that relates to the exopolitical movement.
Well, I'm sort of a stickler with nomenclature. I think it's very, the words and terms are very important when you're trying to evolve new ideas and change policy. So let me be clear. Ufology is a term that has come to describe the citizen science engagement of phenomena, which clearly indicate, in my view, almost beyond a reasonable doubt, there's an extraterrestrial presence engaging us, has been for a very long time, and certainly in a very active way since 1947. And it's a citizen science movement because mainstream science and the government and the entire university and college world have acceded to a government truth embargo and won't engage the issue, so the public has. That has started to change in 1991, and when we entered, as I like to refer to, the era of exopolitics. And what that means is that the next step was to actually change the government policy. And while the science of studying this phenomena, which we'll call ufology, certainly continues, the resolution of the government policy is what's most essential to having this become a matter for all nations, all peoples, and all institutions to engage, which, of course, is what it deserves. It's only, in my opinion, the most profound event in human history. And so my work is the exopolitical process of disclosure, at least for now. There are other aspects to exopolitics. Disclosure is the formal acknowledgement of ET presence by the governments of the world, starting with a government, probably us, doesn't have to be. And we're making a lot of progress there. Now, not surprisingly, as the public awareness grows, when there are events like a Stephenville or an O'Hare or the San Diego sighting or the Guernsey Island sighting and so forth, it's getting more coverage. People want to hear more about it. And that's very significant. And we're seeing that. So the comeback that you're experiencing is a resurgence of the media coverage of events that have been happening regularly for the last 60 years. And that reflects a change in public awareness. And that is a very significant political fact. And I think it's starting to transfer to political reality. So we're headed towards a breakthrough, not in science. Not a scientific breakthrough on the issue. I think we know enough to certainly confirm the ET presence and that they have advanced technology. But we're headed toward a breakthrough in which I think we'll trip the disclosure event, the one we've been shooting for. And my expectation is it'll be the spring of next year.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, we're going to have to talk about that. Yeah, I didn't want to besmirch you by calling you a ufologist.
No. Let me be clear here. You gave me a lot of trouble with that, Tim. I talk in my presentations about the UFO era, which I believe will be categorized as running from 47 to 91, and then with the end of the Cold War and the freeing up of people to come forward who felt that they could talk, what we call the witnesses, people who are from within government, really started driving the political process. And in 91 or 92, we began the era of exopolitics. I'm just trying to get the terms defined.
Oh, no. I was just busting your chest. I know. But yeah, there is an important distinction there between ufology and exopolitics, and often exopolitics sort of falls under the umbrella of ufology when they're kind of running concurrently.
Just like political science and physics, right? Mm-hmm. Neither is a subset of the other, right? Or physics and biology. They're side by side, but they're heavily in connected. Without the UFO research by the citizen science movement, it would be almost impossible to have be able to have any kind of an exopolitical movement now. Well, there had to be a base of understanding that the government would not allow to be developed within our mainstream scientific community or the college and university. So we went and developed it ourselves. So believe me, you can't have one without the other. But clearly, when it comes to government policy changes about what the people know or not know, that's not a scientific decision. That is a political decision based upon a whole range of principles that we would put under political science. But in this case, since we're dealing with an extraterrestrial fact, then I call it exopolitical science, which is why we use the term, and I hope that exopolitics and its subsidiary terms will be in the mainstream dictionaries within hopefully no more than 12 months.
Nice, nice. Well, you're setting a lot of timetables here, and I'm excited about that. Let's sort of talk about what's going on, obviously, here in 2008. This is right in your wheelhouse, of course, the presidential election. Luckily, we're doing the interview now where there's only three remaining potential candidates left, so we don't have to waste a lot of time on the John Kerry's and Mitt Romney's of the race. So what's your take on the three remaining candidates? Where do you see this shaping up from an exopolitical perspective?
Well, to sum up 2008, and understanding that it seems like it was just yesterday that Nixon and Kennedy had their famous black and white television debate, right? Everybody thought that was the end of the world, and it was a first. And, of course, now media and politics are intertwined, inseparable. You can't have one without the other. Well, maybe this way. You can have media without politics, but you sure can't have politics without media, and media thrives on politics. So they're just wedded.
Yeah.
So if you want to deal in the political process, you have to be able to deal with the political media process. Now, given that, there has been a huge increase in media coverage of the issue, which is non-trivial. I keep a media archive on my main site, paradigmresearchgroup.org, that now has over 1,800 articles. Links to 1,800 articles. Most of them are on the internet and they're in there where they were originally located, but many of them are text files that I've created on the server. In any case, that's 1,800 mainstream articles now, not alternative press, not tabloids. And in 2006, drawing from roughly the same sources, I think I logged in 187 articles. In 2007, it jumped to 376.
Oh, wow.
This year, we're on a time frame or a pace to log in 1,200 articles.
Wow.
Now, this has significant impact on the political process, and all of this coverage is heightening public awareness, and a lot of this coverage is also dealing with political aspects of the issue. So not surprisingly, in the during the October 30th debate, of the many, many debates that we've had in the primary season, Tim Russert popped a serious question at Dennis Kucinich, triggered by the mention of Kucinich's 1982 sighting in Dennis, in Shirley MacLaine's new book, Saging While Aging. She's a close friend of Kucinich. They've known each other for 20-some years. She's a godmother to her daughter. There's simply no way that he could try to blow that answer off.
Yeah.
We've been putting the information out to the press and raising the political campaign issue regarding UFOET phenomena for some time. So Chris Matthews followed up with a question to Bill Richardson after the debate. A question eventually went to Romney. Questions gone to Obama. Hillary Clinton is next. So the issue is really on the edge of becoming an actual factor in this campaign that the candidates are going to have to address. This is very significant, very, very significant, because the media is so huge now, and huge in the sense of the scope, internet, television, cable news, the whole nine yards. And once it gets on something, it's absolutely, they call it a media frenzy, right?
Yeah.
All right, now, that's been in play and going on for the last 6-7 months.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're down to almost three candidates, and all three of them have connections to the UFO issue, and given all the groundwork that's been laid, I don't think they're going to be able to get through to November without having to answer serious questions, which could trigger any number of media firestorms. Let's start with McCain. He is probably in the safest position, but McCain was approached by Francis Barwood of the Phoenix City Council during the Phoenix Lights events and was asked to look into it. He made some queries, gave her a reasonable response, though nothing was really resolved. He's shown displeasure in the past with the way NASA conducts its business, which is to say that NASA is completely conflicted in its conduct as a civilian space agency because it's hampered by the National Space Act of 1958 and can't reveal anything related to ET phenomena, no matter what it finds, sees, interacts with, under the national security component of the Space Act. And so it's incredibly conflicted, and as a result, its behavior can get pretty odd. He has commented on that. He's a maverick. He's tough. He's difficult. He's somebody that could buck the inside groups if, in fact, they wanted to keep the embargo going, though I think they've probably decided not to do that. So McCain is somebody you could see pushing a disclosure event or supporting a disclosure event, and that's good. But he's not going to win the presidency. He just isn't. The Republican, it's not their time. The Democrats are going to win. They're going to win big. The two candidates there, Clinton and Obama. Let's start with Obama. He has a very interesting connection to the UFO issue that most people don't know about.
Yeah, I've never heard about this, so I'm really interested in what it is.
Yeah. In his own general history and personal life, nothing, right? Has said anything? I don't think he knows very much. But there is somebody that does, and that is Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is basically the Henry Kissinger of the Democratic side of the aisle. A major player, belongs to all of the high-end internationalist groups, and of course he was the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. At the time that Jimmy Carter came into the White House with a mandate of sorts, not a mandate, but a request by thousands and thousands of people who had written an email, not email, but wrote him, saying that they wanted him to look at the UFO issue, as he had promised to do during his campaign. He's the only president to ever brought that issue up during the campaign. He'd had a sighting. It was known. He got asked about it, and he won. Thousands and thousands of letters poured in. They had to sign people to deal with that, and he initiated two studies, two attempts to study the ET issue in the early months of his administration. One was shut down by the Department of Defense, and that was the outside study that was brought to their door by the Stanford Research Institute in the form of Alfred Weber.
Yep.
They shut that down very quickly. The other study was initiated from within the White House. That one couldn't just be terminated. Basically, there was a refusal to cooperate by any of the agencies, which is interesting. This is, after all, the president. The White House is asking this to go forward. And so they essentially, to save face, just sort of ran it down slowly, and a report was finally written by Marcia Smith, a very nice lady who's now since retired. The report was eventually called the UFO Enigma. It wasn't a bad report, and it was just shoved off to the side, and that was that. Watching all of this take place was Zbigniew Brzezinski. And I think we can be fairly confident that Zbigniew has the kinds of contacts that if he wants to know whether there's validity to the ET presence, he can find out in about three phone calls. And I'm sure he's done that. So he's aware of the ET presence, and he certainly watched Carter make those efforts. Never been asked about it, and Carter's never been really pressed to ask about those studies either. Well, Obama has chosen Zbigniew Brzezinski to be his chief national security advisor during the campaign. So that connects him straight back to Jimmy Carter, the Jimmy Carter studies of 1977, and of course everything and anything that Zbigniew knows about this issue.
Yeah.
And it's only a matter of time, if I have anything to say about it, he's going to be asked about that, as is Zbigniew Brzezinski. And that brings us to Clinton. She's got a real problem. And the problem is simple. And there is a whole section devoted to this on my website, paradigmresearchgroup.org. Go to the main PRG site. Mm-hmm. And check out the section on the Rockefeller Initiative. All of this is based on the work of Canadian researcher Grant Cameron, and there's a link back to his site, presidentialufo.com, where there's substantial write-ups giving more of the history of the Rockefeller Initiative. My page, which is very extensive, is more of a keystone reference page for politicians and media. But between my section at the PRG site and Grant Cameron's section at Presidential UFO, you can get the picture real fast. And that is simply this, that for 2 years, Lawrence Rockefeller tried to convince Bill Clinton to release all the UFO documents and essentially end the truth embargo. It didn't happen, and we could talk about why, but everyone kind of remember, most people remember the Clinton administration. It was wild and crazy, and it was very, very difficult political times. And he did respond. He did some things. He asked Webster Hubble to look into the issue. He asked John Podesta to try to reform the FOI laws or at least get more documents out. But he never took a stand on the ET issue. He wasn't able to do that. Didn't have the political capital. But this went on for 2 years. There were reports. There were studies. There were meetings. And Bill and Hillary went up and discussed this issue with Lawrence Rockefeller at his ranch in 1995. Rockefeller brought researchers to his ranch to plan strategy and on and on and on. And let me tell you something. There is no way that a subject, right, that had no substance could be pursued in that manner within the White House for 2 years and not be valid.
Yeah.
Right? Just absolutely ridiculous. If somebody had come, for instance, and I don't mean to disparage those who believe in Bigfoot, but if someone had approached the White House and said, look, I want to help prepare a report to give to the president to tell the world about Sasquatch, that would have lasted about 5 minutes. There just isn't enough there. But on the UFO issue, of course, there is enough there because there's ET presence that's been proven many times over. So that went on for 2 years. Hillary Clinton watched it all happen from the White House. We have over 1,000 pages of documents released on FOIA confirming the Rockefeller Initiative. There are documents being released by the Clinton Library, which are going to help confirm the awareness of the RI from the White House side. And there's simply nothing she can do about that. And so she saw this go on. She was aware of it. One of the documents refers to the fact that she was briefed on the developments that were going on and the studies that were being done. So, and she'd never been asked about this. Now, Lawrence Rockefeller was a friend of hers. We have photos of them together. We have photos of Bill and Rockefeller together. So they're going to have to very soon, both he and her, but particularly her, since she wishes to be president of the United States, are going to be asked by a Tim Russert or Chris Matthews or Chris Wallace or any other number big shot media pundits or talk show hosts are going to be asked, what did you know about it? What did you think about it? Why did it happen? Where are more documents? And so forth.
Yeah.
These are questions that should have been asked of candidates for the last 50 years. They just aren't. The press went along with the truth embargo. So Hillary Clinton is in the most difficult spot, caught between her desire to be president of the United States and her unwillingness to, on her own, address what is easily the most important issue in the world. And that's going to eventually be resolved here pretty soon. So I invite your listeners to pay close attention to debates and watch for those questions to finally turn up.
Yeah. And now I want to sort of ask you about the media firestorm, if you will, around the Kucinich thing about 6 months ago, like you said. I was kind of disappointed with the whole thing, a little disenfranchised about it, just because it seemed like throughout the year the media was really kind of pro-UFO and less of the giggle factor than we'd seen in quite some time. But then once it got raised into the presidential election and during the debates, it seemed like the giggle factor really got turned up pretty high, and I was sort of disappointed with the whole – with how it turned out. But I guess – I don't know. Talk me off the ledge here about the Kucinich reaction, if you will.
Well, I have you at a disadvantage, Tim, because I follow this constantly.
Oh, yeah. That's why
I'm logging in the articles. I'm checking the videos. In fact, we've got at the ParadigmResearchGroup.org site, we've got video links to the Kucinich question, the Richardson question, Shirley MacLaine interviews where she talks about the Kucinich issue and so forth. It's all there. You can go see all this. And so – When you catch some of this here and there, it's easy to get, perhaps an inaccurate impression. The fact is that the degree of seriousness that the media is treating this is higher than it's ever been.
Okay.
What you picked up on is that since those questions were virtually the first questions ever asked of candidates, principal party candidates, in the middle of a campaign, that they really had to dance. And so they're laughing and they're smiling, and the questioners, both well, not so much Russert, who's a pretty serious guy and nobody to fool with, but Chris Matthews, they were uncomfortable. You could tell. They all know that they should be talking about this. They all know that these questions should be asked and answered, but they're still suffering from the effects of 60-year truth embargo. Mm-hmm. So you're picking up on that, but what you're missing is the fact those questions were asked at all, and that the answers were not dismissive. They were balanced in a sense that they had to dance a little bit, and then they had to try to say something substantive. But overall, this is unprecedented. And then the follow-up articles, which I cataloged, almost all of those were generally straight, including a front-page article in the Wall Street Journal on January the 2nd, which essentially recounted the 1982 Kucinich sighting after they interviewed two individuals who were staying at the house at the same time and were with them when it happened. It was an absolutely straight story. So let me be clear. The media coverage right now of the UFO issue and all related aspects of it is greater than it's ever been in history. Two, it's about as serious as ever been, though I think it might have been more serious in the early days, right, when it was a lot of uncertainty what was going on, and the government hadn't really gotten the embargo going. It didn't really get underway until 52. So it was pretty serious coverage then, but that was a long time ago. Once the truth embargo was in place and they started the whole game of ghettoizing this issue, intellectually ghettoizing the issue, we haven't had coverage like this. So this is a breakthrough time, and we should be very happy about that, and I think that you're going to see it get better.
Yeah.
The internet is, of course, playing a major factor here, because when anything happens, it's usually videoed. We can then archive those videos and link to it, and people can go and see exactly what happened and then draw upon that as they decide what to do next. And so the internet now makes it possible to build a platform of public awareness based upon archived events that we can draw on. This is unprecedented as well, and why the truth embargo, again, really hasn't got a chance now.
You raise a bold prediction, I guess you could say. Spring 2009, what makes you think that we're going to see disclosure in spring 2009, and what's the road to that, you think?
Well, let me be clear. I'm not in the prophecy business. I'm not Gene Dixon, all right? I'm not in the prophecy business. I am a political advocate, all right? I'm an activist. My job is to advance an issue to change government policy. And in that regard, just like any activist and any advocate or lobbyist, which I'm also a lobbyist, you have to pay as close attention as you can. Everything is going on to see what's likely to happen next. All right. Mm-hmm. And my assessment, based upon a whole lot of things, which we really don't have enough time to go into, but particularly drawing on the actions of Bill Richardson and John Podesta, right? Those two in particular, as well as other input I'm getting from some inside sources, also, of course, the press. My assessment is that, one, the truth embargo is falling apart. Two, and this is very important, by the way, the international picture has changed dramatically.
Yeah.
We have substantial developments going on in the United Kingdom, in France, in China, Mexico, Brazil, Canada. The willingness of first world countries to our allies to simply go along with whatever we want is nothing like it was in 1947, I can assure you. And in the last 6 or 7 years, it has deteriorated quite extraordinarily. And so we simply don't have the ability anymore to demand or control the actions of our allies with respect to issues. As a result, at any day, any time, another nation, France, Germany, UK, could hold a press conference, release evidence, probably gun camera footage from chase planes and any other material they want to put forward, and end the truth embargo. And that would be a major blow for the United States. Some people don't agree with that. I don't care. I know it'll be a major blow. So the Democrats and the Republicans have that to contend with, but the Democrats are going to win the next election. So with that outside pressure, and the potential for another nation to take that legacy and end the truth embargo and announce the ET presence to the world, and the U.S. having to follow suit, right, not lead but follow. The Democrats, I think, have been laying the groundwork to end the embargo in the early months of the next administration. They have no incentive to obviously push to do it now for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Now, why early in the next administration? It's really simple calculus. If they don't do it fairly soon in the new administration, then the embargo becomes theirs, just like it became the last administration's, and the one before that, and the one before that. And so if a couple of years go by, then they have to explain to the American people, well, why didn't you tell us a month ago, 6 months ago, a year ago, a year and a half ago? On the other hand, if they reveal it in the early days of the administration, then they can say, look, the previous administrations chose not to allow this information out, chose not to provide you this important information. We believe that policy's wrong, and we're giving it to you now. Everybody wins. They win. People win. All right? And so that's my call. The logic to me is very clear. The circumstances are very straightforward. Either announce it early next year, after winning the election, and take on the mantle and the legacy of the truth embargo presidency and all that entails, or risk having that embargo become yours and having to follow France when they do it or China does it? This is not a hard equation to solve. You don't have to be a rocket scientist, and I make that pun intentionally, to make that call. I'm making that call. This is what I think will happen, and it's certainly what should happen.
If it doesn't happen right away within the first, 6 months or whatever of the new administration, do you think we're going to have to wait another 4 years for this, or it just all depends on what happens probably, right?
Well, ultimately,
yeah,
we'll wait until the U.S. government relents. But again, it may not end up being their decision. Most of the First World Nations elements within those nations are aware of the ET presence, and I'm talking Australia and Canada and England and Germany and France and Italy, right? They all have air forces. Most of them have space programs. They all have telescopes, cameras, chase planes. They've been following this issue. They've been taking in sightings reports just as we have. They know there's an ET presence. That doesn't mean everybody in the government knows, but there are elements that do. Any one of those nations could bring forth sufficient evidence to convince any gaggle of reporters that there's an ET presence. And, of course, if the head of the government of that country confirms it, it's going to be kind of hard to blow that off.
Yeah.
So the fact is it could happen at any moment. I think our government knows this. And there will be a price to be paid if the U.S. ends up standing there off to the side going, well, we meant to say something, but we just never got around to it. It risks making the U.S. look irrelevant.
Yeah.
Right? The most important event in human history happens, and we're sitting there going, well, I would prefer that we lead on this. And one of the reasons I think it's necessary that we lead on this, so ultimately I don't care. I mean, the embargo is going to end, and I don't care who ends it, but ultimately. But I think that the U.S. It needs to be the leader. And the reason is we have really shattered the trust that our allies and all countries in general have with us. And this is a bad thing. It's an unfortunate thing. And we need to try to rectify that. Well, the only way you can really get people's trust is to tell them the truth. There is no other shortcut to that. You can't buy it. You can't send them more aid and say, will you trust us now? You can't lie to them better, meaning, look, we're sorry you don't believe us. We'll try to lie better to you in the future. You have to tell them the truth. Well, this is the biggest truth in the world right now. And if we lead there and we announce this reality and truth to the world's people, that's a long, big step back towards maybe having normalized relations and a proper certain respect for us. So let us hope that we do take the first step, but if we don't, France will or China will.
Like, an announcement like that's going to take a lot of pre-planning, I presume. So do you get the impression that there is sort of that stuff in the works, if you will, behind the scenes to get that ready? I mean, they can't just be like, UFOs are real and ET presence is real, and then not really have any follow-up or any sort of plan of action. Do you know of anything like that? That I'm sure it's being worked out in dark corners if it is, but I don't know. Maybe you've heard something.
Well, look, the event itself would be no more complex, in my opinion, than a really expensive wedding. You get a high-level people together from a variety of fields, including some civilian leaders, and you put them into a nice venue with a good moderator, and you make an announcement and take questions, and you're done. The president would probably announce at least announced there was going to be a major announcement from the Oval Office and then flip it over. That's not a big deal, put together overnight. They've had 60 years to sort of decide how to deal with a post-disclosure follow-up, so I don't think there's a lot required there. I suppose the anal retentive control freaks in government would love to do a lot of things, but fortunately they don't call the day. I think the fundamental issue is having agreement on the top end in the executive branch. Congress is almost irrelevant in this issue. It shouldn't be. But it's made itself irrelevant, which is really an unfortunate thing, and I hope someday Congress figures that out. And then the management groups that are control of the issue within government, and they're deeper down. In some cases, I think literally deeper down. And it's generally, I believe, that we can't prove it, cross-agency committees. These are unacknowledged cross-agency committees where you have a group of key agencies have a designated representative that goes and meets with other designated representatives privately. Very little or no records are kept. and they make decisions and discuss the status of things, and there may be more than one of these. And this is where the issue is managed so that there is some sort of coherence within government. Though, again, most people within the government would not even know these agencies or these groups are coming together.
Yeah.
But there has to be sort of an agreement down there that, okay, let's go. They would then connect by any number of means with the White House or the executive to say, fine, we'll go there, and then bingo. Then they would have to move very quickly because they don't want it to leak. They would probably have to get it out, done, ready to go within 10 days, 2 weeks, because you just can't be out planning something like that. It'll be all over the Internet, and that would be messy. So once a decision is made, they move very fast. A couple of weeks, bing, there it's done. And then once it's out, once the cat's out of the bag, then they can take their time and they can plan a lot of stuff. They can orchestrate it any way they want to. And we will deal with that and address that. And hopefully the process will be as truthful and as honest as possible. But that will be up to the American people. American people will ultimately decide how much they learn in the aftermath of disclosure and how accurate that information is. If we don't try or make an effort, then maybe we'll get inaccurate information. But we have a responsibility here. We simply cannot let government do anything it wants and expect to have it serve your best interest. At some point, you've got to exert some influence on it. And that's a lesson the American people need to relearn and very soon.
Yeah.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the Internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?